The living soul in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The emergent human whole. Preface. The final phrase in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. This article is part of a four-part study on Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The previous articles examined the dust of the ground, the breath of life, and the key operative word became. Each of those studies traced one part of the ordered movement by which man comes into being. This article now focuses on the final concluding phrase, living soul. For the fullest context, the previous three studies should be read first, since they establish the elements and movement that lead to this final named result. Introduction. The result is read from the event. The phrase living soul stands at the end of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7, not at the beginning. That placement matters. The verse does not begin with an abstract definition of soul and then attach that definition to man. It first narrates an ordered act of formation, impartation, and becoming. This means the final phrase must be read as a result, not as an isolated term. The meaning of living soul is carried by the movement that leads to it. The verse does not invite the reader to pull the word soul out of the sentence and define it independently. It directs the reader to follow the event until the final living reality appears. The question, then, is not merely, what is a soul? The deeper question is, what has come into being at the end of this event? Genesis answers, man became a living soul. Thesis. In Genesis chapter 2 verse 7, living soul names the completed living creaturely whole that comes into being at the conclusion of the event. It identifies the result produced through the union of the ground-derived, God-formed physical element and the God-imparted spiritual element, brought to its outcome through the transition marked by became. The phrase living soul must first be read as one complete designation. At the phrase level, it names the living creaturely whole that has emerged. Yet within that one designation, the wording also carries a lexical distinction. Living describes the state of the being, while soul identifies the type of being that lives. Therefore, soul is not a separate component inside man, nor is it produced by cutting the phrase apart. It is the scriptural type designation of the completed human whole, recognized from the whole emergence event of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. Part 1. The four textual anchors of the living soul. Before living soul can be understood, it must be read in its proper place within Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The phrase does not stand alone, and it does not appear as an isolated definition. It comes at the end of an ordered event in which God forms, God imparts, and man becomes. That context controls the meaning of the final phrase. The living soul is introduced as the named result of the event. To understand its place, value, and significance, the movement of the verse must be followed carefully. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 gives four textual anchors for understanding the final phrase. Revelation. God gives concrete designations for real elements and outcomes. Constitution. The physical and spiritual elements are named within the event. Transition. Became marks the movement from elements to whole. Arrival. Living soul names the final creaturely result. These anchors are already present in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. They do not create the meaning from outside the text. They point to the context the verse itself provides, so that living soul is understood as the final emergent whole produced through the event. Anchor 1. Revelation. Naming the final result. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 is revelation. The formation of man is not known because a human observer stood beside God and recorded the event from the outside. Man's beginning is known because God gives language for it. That matters for the phrase living soul. This phrase does not appear in a neutral report or as an isolated label. It belongs to the revealed account of man's emergence. The same verse that uses dust of the ground and breath of life as revelatory designations for the elements now gives living soul as the corresponding name for the result. That language must not be forced into two false options. The first error is crude literalism, treating the words as if their ordinary surface meaning exhausts the reality being revealed. The second error is empty metaphor, treating the words as poetic symbols with no real element or outcome underneath them. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 gives neither. It gives revelatory designations. A revelatory designation is Scripture's way of naming a real divine reality in language humans can understand, without making that reality identical to the created image used to describe it. These designations are functional names, not bare material descriptors. They identify each reality according to its place, role, and contribution within the event. This does not empty the created term of meaning. It means the term names the reality according to its role in the revealed event. not merely according to its surface material description. The point can be seen through a simple analogy. A man standing at the shore may describe the ocean as a great body of water. That phrase truly names what he sees, but it does not exhaust the ocean's depth, width, movement, or power. The phrase is real and fitting, but the reality exceeds the ordinary words used to describe it. So also in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7, the words are concrete, but the realities they designate are profound. The phrase living soul is not merely a surface description of something alive. It is the revealed name of the living creaturely whole that emerges at the end of the event. This is the first anchor. Living soul must be heard as revelatory language. Not as crude literalism and not as empty metaphor. Anchor 2. Constitution. The elements that form the whole. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not present living soul as a result that appears from nowhere. The final whole comes into being through constituent elements named within the event. The dust of the ground designates the ground-derived physical element. This element is visible, formed, and tied to the earthly order. The breath of life designates the God-imparted spiritual element. This element is not the same as the breath language itself. The phrase breath of life is the revelatory designation that names the spiritual element within the event. The designation breath is fitting because breath itself is unseen yet real. It is not grasped as a visible object like dust, yet its presence is known by its life-bearing effect. The word therefore carries the right qualities for naming the spiritual element, invisible, real, imparted, and life-bearing. Both elements are real. The physical elementis real is visible, material, ground-derived substance. The spiritual elementis real is invisible, non-material, God-imparted substance. One is seen, the other is unseen, but unseen does not mean unreal. A visible element and an invisible element cannot produce a real living whole unless both truly belong to the event. This is the constitution point. Living soul is the finished creaturely whole constituted through the coming together of these two real elements. The result is not one element by itself, nor a loose collection of elements. It is one living whole in which the physical and spiritual elements have come together in God's ordered act. The cake analogy helps here. A cake is not flour by itself, nor eggs by themselves, nor butter by itself. It is the finished whole that comes from the ingredients being brought together into one result. The ingredients remain important because they explain the constitution of the final reality. So also, living soul names the completed creaturely whole constituted through the physical element designated by dust of the ground and the spiritual element designated by breath of life. This is the second anchor. The living soul is constituted through two real elements, physical and spiritual, brought together into one living creaturely whole. Anchor 3. Transition became marks emergence. The word became is the key operative word in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The earlier movements, formed and breathed, bring the constituent elements into the event. But became marks the decisive transition within the event itself. This word signals a point of change. Something comes into being that was not present as the finished reality before. The physical element has been formed. The spiritual element has been imparted. But the living soul has not yet appeared until the verse reaches became. The point does not rest on the verb in isolation. It rests on the whole sequence of the verse. Formation, inbreathing, becoming, and final naming. Within that sequence, became marks the movement into the completed result. This is why Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 may be read as an emergence account. In this study, emergence does not mean a modern theory of consciousness or a scientific model of complexity. It simply means the coming into being of a new unified whole through the ordered relation of the constituent elements named in the verse. The result is not the physical element evolving into something else, not the spiritual element morphing into a creature, not one element shape shifting into another, not a pre-existing subject assuming flesh. It is the coming into being of a new living whole, through God's ordered act. The word became marks that threshold. It identifies the threshold where the ordered relation of the formed physical element and the God-imparted spiritual element reaches its God-ordered outcome, one new living whole. That new reality is not explained as gradual evolution, insertion, external activation, or assumption of flesh. It is an emergent reality. In the Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 sense, a unified whole coming into being through God's ordered act. The significance of became is therefore foundational. It governs how the final phrase must be read. The verse is not describing a completed body receiving an added soul. It is describing the coming into being of the living creaturely whole. This is the third anchor. Became marks the transition of emergence, the point at which the ordered event brings forth a new living whole. Anchor 4. Arrival. Living soul names what emerged. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 reaches its completion in the phrase living soul. This phrase stands at the end of the verse because it names what the whole event has produced. The formation has taken place. The inbreathing has taken place. The transition of became has occurred. Now the finished reality stands before us and receives its revealed designation, living soul. This is the arrival point. The verse does not merely say that Adam became active, animated, or biologically alive. It does not present the final result as a formed body finally empowered to function. The focus of the verse is not simply animation. The focus is the completed emergent creaturely reality that has come into being. Living soul names that reality. It names the finished product of the event. It names the living whole that has emerged through the union of the physical element and the spiritual element. It names the creaturely reality that has now taken shape through God's ordered act. This means living soul must be heard as the name of the completed whole, not merely as a description of life being switched on. The phrase identifies what has arrived, a living creaturely being. At this broad level, living soul names the living creaturely category. It tells us that what has emerged belongs within the order of living creatures. But because Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 has given a distinct emergence event for man, this broad category will require further distinction. This is the fourth anchor. Living soul names the completed emergent creaturely whole that stands at the end of the event. The living soul is the completed creaturely whole. The four anchors now bring the final phrase into focus. Living soul names the completed creaturely whole that has emerged through the event. It is the name of the living reality that now stands at the end of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. This living soul is not presented as a creature brought forth from the ground alone. The verse gives a more direct and personal emergence. God forms. God breathes. Man becomes. The result is a living creaturely whole whose origin cannot be explained by the ground by itself. The living soul is therefore a ground formed in God inbreathed creaturely whole. Its physical element gives it visible presence within the created world. Its spiritual element gives it unseen, life-bearing depth not explainable by physical origin alone. These elements do not disappear into the result, and they do not remain beside each other as separate items. They constitute the one living whole that has emerged. The cake analogy helps clarify the point. Flour, eggs, butter, sugar, and vanilla begin as distinct ingredients. Once baked, they are no longer separate piles, but their contributions remain present in the cake's structure, richness, texture, and character. The finished cake is more than the ingredients sitting beside each other, yet it is not unrelated to what entered the process. So also, the living soul is not merely the sum of the elements, but neither is it detached from them. The physical and spiritual elements are carried into the completed whole and give that whole its creaturely character. This is why living soul names more than the fact that life has begun. It names the completed living creaturely reality that has come into being through God's ordered act. It identifies the final result as a living creature within the created order, yet one whose emergence is marked by God's direct forming and inbreathing. At this point, the first task is complete. Living soul has been established as the final emergent creaturely whole. But because living soul names the broad living creature category, a further question now arises from the text itself. What type of living creaturely whole has emerged? That question moves into part 2. Part 2. The identification of the human type. Part 1 established the result of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. Man became a living soul. The final phrase names the completed living creaturely whole that emerged through the event. But once the result is established, the next question arises from the text itself. What type of living creaturely whole has emerged? This question is necessary because living soul names a broad living creature category. It tells us that what has emerged belongs within the order of living creatures. But Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not leave man as an undifferentiated living creature within that broad category. It gives a distinct emergence event. The type, therefore, is not invented from outside the verse. It is discovered by reading the constitution of the living whole that Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 presents. Type is identified by constitution. A type is identified by what constitutes the whole. A cake belongs to the broad category of baked goods, but its type is not identified by the broad category alone. Its type is recognized by its ingredients, its process, and the final form that comes forth. Bread and cake may share the same broad category, but they are not the same type. The difference is found in what went into the process and what emerged from it. The same logic applies to Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The question is not merely whether man is alive. The question is what kind of living whole has come into being through this specific event. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 gives the constitution of man's emergence. The physical element is ground-derived. The spiritual element is God-imparted. The transition is becoming. The result is living soul. This means the human type is not identified by one element alone. Man is not defined merely by the dust, nor merely by the breath, nor merely by animation. His whatness is defined by the whole ordered event that brings him into being. The type is read from the constitution of the result. The double source emergence. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 presents man as a living whole constituted through two real elements. The first is the ground-derived physical element, designated by the dust of the ground. This gives man his visible, formed, earthly presence within the created order. The second is the God-imparted spiritual element, designated by the breath of life. This gives man an unseen, life-bearing element not explainable by the ground alone. This double-source emergence is the key to the human type. If man were constituted by the physical element alone, his type would be explained by the ground. If man were constituted by the spiritual element alone, his type would belong to the spiritual order. But Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 presents neither. It presents a living whole constituted through the union of the physical element and the spiritual element. That is why man cannot be classified as merely physical or merely spiritual. He is a distinct creaturely whole produced through both. The physical element gives him visible created presence. The spiritual element gives him unseen life-bearing depth. Together, through the transition of becoming, they produce the living whole named at the end of the verse. This is the constitutional necessity behind the type. Man is soul, because he is the living whole constituted through both elements. Why soul is the type designation? The phrase living soul does double work. At the result level, living soul names the completed living creaturely whole that emerged through the event. At the lexical level, the noun soul carries the type designation of that whole. The phrase remains one designation. It must not be divided into two separate things inside man. Yet within that one designation, living describes the state of the being, while soul identifies the type of being that lives. This means the move from living soul to soulless, not a trimming of the phrase. It is a recognition of how the phrase functions after the whole event has been followed. The whole phrase names the result. The noun identifies the type. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not merely say man became alive. It says man became a living soul. The wording matters because the final designation does more than report life. It names the living whole according to the kind of being that has emerged. So soul is not an ingredient inside man. Soul is the type designation of the living whole produced through the union of the physical and spiritual elements. It is the revealed name that fits the constituted result. Soul is the fitting designation because it names the distinct creaturely reality produced through the union of the physical and spiritual elements. Man is not merely physical, and he is not merely spiritual. He is the living whole constituted through both. This does not mean every later use of soul carries the same emphasis in every context. Scripture can use soul language with different focuses. But when soul names the human person as a whole, Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 supplies the foundational pattern. Genesis itself confirms this usage later. Genesis chapter 46 verse 26 speaks of all the souls who came with Jacob into Egypt, and Genesis chapter 46 verse 27 gives the full number of those souls. These souls are not separate inner objects being counted inside bodies. They are human persons. This later usage does not create the definition. It confirms that Genesis can use soul as whole person human designation. Therefore, Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 establishes the foundation, and Genesis chapter 46 confirms the usage. The human person can be called soul, because Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 has already revealed the human whole as the living soul type being. Shared category, distinct type. The comparison with other living creatures must be handled carefully. The point is not that man alone belongs to the broad category of living creaturely being. Genesis can speak of other creatures with living soul language. That shared category must be acknowledged. But a shared category does not erase a distinct type. Bread and cake both belong to the broad category of baked goods. That shared category is real, but it does not make them the same type. The difference is found in the ingredients, the process, and the finished form. The category tells us the broad field. The constitution identifies the specific type. So also, the broad living creature category tells us that man belongs within the order of living creatures. But Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 gives man a distinct emergence within that category. The verse does not merely say that man lives. It narrates formation from the dust of the ground, the impartation designated by the breath of life, and the transition of becoming. That detail matters. The shared phrase establishes common creaturely life. The distinct Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 narration establishes the human type. The difference, then, is not found by denying the shared category. The difference is found by reading the distinct constitution. Living soul names the broad living creature category. Soul identifies the human type within that category, because Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 presents man as the living whole constituted through the union of the ground-derived physical element and the God-imparted spiritual element. This is why the type designation soul is necessary. It preserves what the text has revealed. Man is a living creaturely whole, but not an indifferentiated one. His type is identified by the unique emergence event that brings him into being. The detail creates the distinction. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not give unnecessary detail. The verse does not simply say that man lived. It tells how man came into being. That sequence is not decorative. It is identifying. The detail of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 matters because the human emergence is distinct. The formation, the inbreathing, and the becoming are not narrated merely to show that man is alive. They identify the kind of living whole that has come into being. This is the narrative necessity of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The text gives the details because the type of being that emerges is distinct. The living soul is not merely another instance of life. It is the completed human whole whose constitution requires the type designation soul, the uniqueness of what man is. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 establishes the uniqueness of what man is. Before later scripture unfolds the uniqueness of who man is. That does not make the later question of who unimportant. It simply preserves the order of revelation. The later personal life of man must be understood from within the creaturely type Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 first establishes. Man's whatness is not generic. He is not merely a living organism with higher functions added later. He is not an undefined creature who becomes special only when later faculties appear. His uniqueness begins at the level of emergence itself. The living soul is the completed creaturely whole. Soul is the type of that whole. This means the human being is unique first in what he is. Soul within the living creaturely order. Conclusion to part 2. Part 2 has identified the type of the living whole established in part 1. The progression is simple. Living soul names the broad living creature category. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 gives man a distinct emergence within that category. That emergence is constituted through the physical element and the spiritual element. The result is neither merely physical nor merely spiritual. The revealed type designation that fits this completed reality is soul. Man does not become soul. Because the word is isolated from the phrase living soul. Man is identified as soul because the whole event produces a distinct kind of living creaturely being. That is the constitutional bridge. Soul is the type designation of the human whole produced through formation, inbreathing, and becoming. Part 3. Why this foundation matters. If Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 establishes man as a soul type living whole, several major theological shifts follow. The body belongs to the human whole. If man is soul, in the Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 sense, then the body is not a temporary shell. The physical element belongs to the living whole. It is part of what man is as the soul type creature. The dust formed element is the visible, formed element of the living soul being. This means embodied life matters. Physical existence is not an accident, a prison, or an inferior layer to be escaped. The body belongs to the human whole God brought into being. The spiritual element is real. The spiritual element is also not imaginary, symbolic, or reducible to physical chemistry. The breath of life designates the God-imparted, life-bearing spiritual element within man's emergence. It is unseen, but it is not unreal. It is non-physical, but it is not nothing. Man is not explained by the ground alone. His living whole includes a spiritual element that gives his existence a depth physical analysis cannot account for by itself. Because this spiritual element is God imparted, the living soul being is not closed within the ground-derived order. Man's constitution includes an unseen, life-bearing element that grounds his Godward capacity. Without turning that capacity into a separate part, human life is compound unity. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 presents man as one living whole, constituted through physical and spiritual elements. A compound unity is one whole constituted through more than one real element. The elements are not treated as isolated pieces, yet the whole is not explainable by one element alone. Water gives a limited analogy. Hydrogen and oxygen are distinct, but when brought into ordered union, the result is not merely hydrogen beside oxygen. A new reality appears, water, with properties that cannot be explained by either element alone. So also, the physical and spiritual elements in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 belong together in one living soul being. The physical element gives man visible created presence. The spiritual element gives man unseen life-bearing depth. The human being is not merely the physical element, not merely the spiritual element, and not two elements sitting side by side. He is the living whole that comes into being through their ordered union. This is why man must not be reduced to biology alone or treated as a spiritual being merely using a body. The human being is a compound unity, one living creaturely whole whose type is soul. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 defines the pattern of human emergence. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 is not an isolated origin story that applies only to the first man and then disappears from view. It establishes the foundational pattern of human emergence. Adam is the first living soul. His formation is unique in its narrated mode. God forms him from the dust of the ground and breathes into his nostrils the breath of life. Later human beings are not formed by that exact same immediate act. They come through human generation. But human generation does not replace the Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 pattern. It carries it forward. Every human person still comes into being through the union of a physical element and a spiritual element. The physical element gives the person visible, embodied, creaturely presence within the created order. The spiritual element gives the person unseen, life-bearing depth. Through the ordered union of these elements, the Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 pattern of becoming is carried forward in every human person. The person does not merely possess two elements. The person emerges as a living human whole. That is the continuing significance of Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. The verse does not merely tell what happened once to Adam. It reveals what must be true for man to be man. A human being is not a detachable consciousness placed into flesh, nor a merely biological organism later upgraded by spiritual language. A human being comes into being as a living soul, one compound unity constituted through physical and spiritual elements. The command to be fruitful and multiply carries this human emergence pattern forward. Each human person is not a new kind of being, nor a revised version of the original definition. Each person belongs to the same Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 reality, a living whole brought into being through the union of the physical and spiritual elements. So Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 remains the controlling foundation for biblical anthropology. It defines not only Adam's beginning, but the pattern by which humanity continues. Man is, and remains, the living soul type being. Physical element. Spiritual element. Becoming. Living soul. That is the human pattern. Death and resurrection must begin here. This foundation also shapes later questions about death and resurrection. If man is an integrated living soul being, then death cannot be romanticized as the simple release of a hidden self from a body. Death is the breakdown of the living whole. It is the undoing of the unity established in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. Resurrection, therefore, is not an optional addition to human hope. It concerns the restoration of the whole human being. The body matters because the physical element belongs to the human type from the beginning. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not answer every later question. It gives the foundation from which later questions must be asked. Conclusion. Man became a living soul. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 is not a flat statement that man became alive. It is the revelation of a living creaturely whole, coming into being. The dust of the ground designates the ground-derived physical element. The breath of life designates the God-imparted spiritual element. Became marks the transition by which the event reaches its result. Living soul names the completed living whole that emerges. At the broad level, living soul. names the living creaturely category. At the specific level, soul identifies the human type within that category. Man is soul. In the Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 says, the unique living creaturely type established through formation, inbreathing, and becoming. Genesis chapter 2 verse 7 does not present soul as something added to man, but as the type designation of the living human whole that came into being. That is the root of biblical anthropology in Genesis chapter 2 verse 7. Man became a living soul.